Hi, I'm Skating PJ, and this is Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast, where we're going to get up close and personal with members of our skating family who have a connection to Ontario. So, let's talk about it. Hi, everybody. At Skating PJ here. And do I ever have an episode for you today on Let's Talk About It? We are going to be speaking with my pal, but also longtime Ontario resident, although originally from Alberta, four-time world champion, three-time Olympian, Kurt Browning.
I'll do the confetti thing for you.
Oh, I like it.
DJ, every one of your episodes is, I've got an episode for you. Every one of them is.
Do you know what? To tell you the truth, I'm really lucky. I've got some outstanding guests, and you, my friend, are no exception.
Okay. Let's get respectful here.
Let's get into it. First of all, I always love to go back to your participation in a little carnival where you were a scuba diver with the Javex bottle on your back.
Two Javex bottles.
Two. That's very exciting.
Double tank.
Who made those costumes? And how old were you?
Good old Neva Browning made those. How old, I guess? Must have been 13 or 14, somewhere in there. And it was an important thing because I had grown up on the farm, and Caroline was the town 5 miles away. And, now that's where the Kurt Browning Arena is. Very exciting. But Rocky Mountain House was like a 35-minute drive. And they had a big club with lots of great skaters and very competitive skaters, provincial champions, like really. So it was pretty cool. And there was only three guys. So it was Brent and Steve Allen, brothers, and then me. So Brent and I were out there scuba diving among, I don't know what the girls were doing. Maybe they were fish or seahorses, but anyways, it was all my job was to swim around. That was it. No choreography.
Do you know, it's so much fun. And, through the years, because we've known each other a long time, but I have loved your stories of some of your antics as a young person. And I know that the ice has always been important to you. So, for instance, climbing the boards, using your toe picks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, that was in Caroline. Okay. So I was a hockey player, but I wasn't getting enough hockey time on the ice. So mom decided you're not going to learn how to skate by not skating. So a practice on Tuesday and a game on Saturday where the coach isn't playing you doesn't work. And I was lucky that as a little kid, they covered the arena, they covered the ice and created an arena in Caroline. So we had a skating club. So in I went, everyone went, everyone joined. And it might as well have been called Crack the Whip Club, because nobody, it was all tag and, you know, Red Rover, I called George over and that sort of thing. So finally, we got the skating club and dad's like, well, you've got these figure skates now. They're toe picks. They're different. And I think you should go to the pond before trying them out. So we did. He talked me into it. And thank God, because I fell because toe picks are very strange. They're right where you want to step.
Yes.
Doesn't make any sense. And so then when I went into town, I wanted to, what else could these toe picks do? So we had a brand new rink. The boards were pine. So they weren't covered in plastic. This is 19 something. And so I went over and I was like, man, these toe picks are angry. What can they, like, so I kicked the boards just a little bit. I chipped out a bit of pine. What else? What if I kicked it harder? And then I kicked and stepped up on it. And the pine was so soft that the toe picks just sunk into them. So to quicken the story up, I got so deft at it that I could like one, two, three. And then the fourth step was like me standing on the boards, no hands. So just tum, 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 like a wood tree climber. I got in a lot of trouble, told not to do that. So I only got to do that 3 or 4 times, but it was really fun.
You know, it was worth.
And I thought figure skating's cool. Like, this is it.
You know what's so hilarious? Can you imagine if they'd had YouTube in that time? They would have captured you going off the boards.
I know. So I watch Keegan Messing, and I'm like, yeah, that was me. I was, like a molecule bouncing around inside a washing machine. That was me.
So, Kurt, what is the attraction to the ice? What do you think? Like, I mean, you talk about playing hockey. At what age did you switch, by the way? About?
I was just 16 when I moved to Edmonton, and we didn't take my hockey bag because it was too expensive and stuff. Okay. So I did both until I was almost 16.
Wow. Like 16. And I know you still love the sport.
Yeah, it's a great sport. Loved watching it. Hated watching my Oilers and my Leafs not make it. It's frustrating this year, last year too. I was honorary captain of the Edmonton Oilers for 1 year.
Were you really?
Yeah. So it was the anniversary, like 75th anniversary of the NHL or something like that. And every team picked an honorary captain. Like, I think Michael J. Fox was Vancouver's. And so it was pretty cool. So hockey, yeah, I love hockey. Lots of figure skaters are making a living teaching hockey skaters how to skate. Nam Nguyen and Mike David Peltier, Barbara Underhill.
Yeah,
Stephen Cousins. So not me. I don't teach it, but I do love the hockey skates are like sports cars, and they're a lot of fun. They're maneuverable and quick.
Okay. And what about as far as being able to sort of like do quick turns, quick this, quick that? Which is easier, hockey or figure skates, for maneuverability? Or is there? Are they different?
They're just very different. I think that. You can accelerate better in hockey skates, and they are super maneuverable. You watch the NHL now, and the players are all so wildly good on their skates that never used to be like that. There was two or three guys that were really good on the ice, and two of those were referees. But nowadays everyone's good. So I don't know what's more maneuverable. I mean, I think that the blade is a little flatter and wider with a figure skate. And so I think footwork is easier for me. But the hockey, they're both, I don't have an answer. They're both maneuver. Okay. They're just different, but you could definitely accelerate better in hockey skates.
Okay. I want to know about, as I said, the attraction of the ice when you were a very little kid, whether you were playing hockey or figure skating, tell me about that glide. What attracted you to the ice, and then what attracted you to figure skating aside from the picks?
Jumping. I think the glide too. Everyone likes a nice downhill slope on a bike with a curve that goes like that. I mean, that's what skating is for me. That just that running, skiing as well has that same. Surfing, if I could do it, I'm sure, but I can't. And I think that honestly, as a youngling, it was jumping. It wasn't the glide. You take that for granted. You when you're older, you start to appreciate it more, and the running edge of the three turn going in and skating back out, not just flipping backwards. Yep. All those things, all those beautiful moments in skating happen after you've appreciated it for a while. But jumping, that is, you know, kinetic. It is immediate, explosive, and a lot of fun. And I think it was all about trying to get into the air, fly as far as I could.
So first world championships after your first Olympic games, not first world championships, world championships after your first Olympic games in 1988, you land the first ratified quad jump, a quad toe. Yep. You could imagine those of us who were watching it on television were just like just freaked out. Did you feel that in the moment, or were you too focused on what else you had to do?
No, I thought I didn't think they'd count it because it was a three turn. I landed on the back outside edge or back edge. Backwards. Let's face it, you land on a flat. But landed and then did the three turn to catch my balance. So I thought they weren't going to count it. So I was angry. I was really mad at myself because I had nailed it in warm up and I had been nailing it all week. And I just was a little bit too far back, or maybe just a little too careful, and I didn't nail it. So I thought it wasn't going to count. But Liz Manley and I maybe a couple of the other skaters from the Canadian team were in the far corner screaming their heads off while I was skating. And the closer to the end of the number, the long program, the more they were. And I kept looking over going, why are they freaking out so much? I mean, yay, thanks for the support. But it started getting in my head going, maybe they thought I landed it, or maybe they think it's going to count. So I was literally on another planet thinking about all this stuff while I was banging off all the rest of the program. And it wasn't until afterwards that they told me that it was going to count. I think it's interesting because Joseph Srbobchuk, I think in 85 from Czechoslovakia, Joseph, Jumping Joe with the long blonde hair. He did it in, I can't remember where he did it. He had short hair when he did it. I've seen the video on YouTube. Anyways, he had a little 2 foot. So if I can pretend, here's my landing foot and the left foot's in front and the toe pick goes bing. And it just sort of helps you stop the rotation. And it gives you a little 2 foot balance thing. And for some reason, doing a three turn is okay, but doing the 2 foot wasn't. And
I think it's the landing on 1 foot.
It's the landing on 1 foot thing that seemed to make it happen. So I try to share as much of that moment with Jumpin' Joe because he owned the quad. Like he had it in his back pocket whenever he wanted. And so I think that it's the least I could do was try and share it with Jumpin' Joe.
You were at the Olympic Games three times. I want
three t-shirts to prove it. Yep.
Three t-shirts. Yeah. I got t-shirts from all kinds of places. And actually, I'm going to make a quilt out of them. What do you think about that, Kurt?
My sister's working on mine already. So go, Dina.
Well, Dina, will you do mine? Anyway, what I want to know is talk to me about wearing the maple leaf. I mean, you subsequently ended up in Toronto. You subsequently ended up at the Granite Club for your final Olympic appearance, working with Lewis and Mary Jane Stong and Sandra Bezek, of course. But I want to know, what's it like at the Olympic Games, the biggest event, you know, on the planet, to be wearing the maple leaf and then to be carried the flag in the closing ceremony or the opening? I forgot to just double check.
If you win, you carry it at the closing.
Okay.
So it wasn't the closing. Okay. So it's not, I mean, I went to many world title, the world championships as well.
Sure.
And you're wearing the flag there as well. It's just not the same. It's just so wildly global, you know, when you're at the Olympic Games and it's the same guys, same eyes, same solos, same competition. It's really just a very different feeling to have your teammates be skiers and hockey players and, you know, and other bobsleds and stuff like that. So wearing the leaf felt full, like a full rounded deal. You were all of Canada. You weren't just figure skating. And I think that's the big difference is the fact that, and even I went to the Alberta Winter Games as a little kid. And that's when I was walking in the ceremonies with hockey players. I thought, this is so weird, but it was just as weird when I was an adult doing it later. And it's the sharing and Goodwill Games in Seattle. It's the sharing of being a teammate with a tennis player or a ping pong player. And, you know, at the Seattle Games and stuff like that. So I think that's the difference. It's the inclusion of the other sports that makes it so special.
Do you remember the very first team jacket you got? And if it meant something to you, I remember, you know, envying all those skaters who had something with X across their back that said that they had arrived. What about you? What was that moment? Where were you? What was it?
Yeah, Team Alberta. I don't know where I got it handed to me. I don't remember that. But having it was massive because you'd made it. You were it. You were in the it crowd. And even better, I remember that Team Alberta was really good at giving you a crest that had the year. So you had sectionals, you had divisionals, and you had Canadians. So it was kind of like, you know, like you're in World War I, World War II, and you have these medals that you've worked really hard for.
Sure.
Sure. But on the ice. So that was really cool. And getting those things and then your mom sewing them on in V's so that went, and as you got older, it was like all the way down to your elbow didn't bend well because the thing was like all the way down to here, which was hilarious and awesome. And then, so now my skate bag has some of those taken off and put onto my skate bag, like the skate bag that I use now has all my badges on it. Thanks, Alyssa, for sewing that for me. You're welcome.
Thanks, Alyssa.
she's hidden in the back somewhere. So that's it for me. It was all about the badges. Yep.
Do you find your relationships in figure skating versus your relationships, let's say, at school or other places in the world, were they different? Because I find that I've still got friends from my skating days, which go way, way, way back. What about you?
I guess the fact is neither one of us have left this sport behind us very far. Yeah. So it helps to be a part of the sport. I mean, if you and I still worked in our elementary school, we might still have some of those friends. But staying at the rink is just this place where we just keep all coming back to. You know, like the fact that we love the ice and the sport, and you know, and now you and I are caretakers, basically. You know, we're trying to make sure that the sport is loved by as many people as possible, and made sure that the people in the sport are cared for and protected, and have a chance to enjoy it as much as you and I have. So I think that that's what it is that the ice keeps pulling us back. So the friendships have existed for a long time. You know, Mike Slipchuk, I remember, of course, he's a big man at Skate Canada now.
He sure is.
But he was Canadian champion, had to beat Elvis Stoiko at his best to do that. And he also landed quads in competition. So pretty cool to have that friendship last. But I can remember when Mike walked into the dressing room for the very first time, the other boys were, some of us were already there, and we're 14, I don't know, 13 or 14. And the door goes literally bang against the wall, and we all look, and this curly blonde thing walks in with Coke bottle bottom glasses, and he goes, "Hi, my name's Mike, and I can do a lutz. What can you guys do?" And how do you not stay friends with that? I mean, so yeah, I think that, and also building things together create friendship. With Stars and Ice, over the years, we've built so many moments that we've shared with audiences across the planet. And I think when you build something together, even at CBC, you know, when we're working at CBC, yeah, and we're telling the skaters' stories, we're building something together. And I think that's where friendships really get made.
You know what is also interesting about relationships? First of all, I want to talk a little bit about your relationship to choreography that was given to you. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking of your Casablanca program, but I'm thinking of a ton of your show programs, but also choreography that you helped other skaters with. So talk to me a little bit about what choreography meant to you as a skater, and then to you as a choreographer.
As a skater, as a young lad, of course, I saw Brian Orser skate to Pink Panther. So I had to skate to Pink Panther. And I needed this solo in 3 days. Right. So you make it up yourself. And so I think that's where it started. It was out of necessity. But some skaters will go a whole career. I don't think Joni Rochette ever choreographed anything. I think she was always ready for people to come to her. And she, yep, was completely happy to do whatever she was given. And she didn't question it. And she just nailed it. Shailene Bourne gave her stuff. Jeff Butler gave her stuff. It was amazing. And then there's skaters like me, and I guess eventually Shay and Jeff, that were skaters who were like thinking differently about the process. So music was chosen for you, and maybe you didn't like it. Maybe you wished you'd chosen that. And then from there, you start taking control of your own destiny. And also, I lived at a time as a professional skater where if I paid somebody for every program I did, I like not every program made enough money. Like it was a one-off. So right. I can't get a choreographer, pay them, get a costume, and then go and make any money. It was like a mute point.
Yep.
So you end up doing it yourself because you, in that situation, fiscally, it made no sense. So, and then Sandra Bezick did this weird thing 1 year where she said, "We're going to do this country western number. There's going to be six of us on the ice, and you're going to do the choreography." And I went, "Me?" And she just handed me a number. So mm-hmm. She must have seen something. She must have been in all the work that we'd done together. She must have seen how many times I was making suggestions or running off and coming back with moves or just participating instead of standing there and just waiting for the next thing. So she must have seen something. So I'm really thankful that she gave me the confidence to allow my creativity to find a space. And Stars and Ice for the last 2 years has been a lot of fun to be doing the choreography with Alyssa. Thank you. And
we're talking about Alyssa Cisney, Kurt's wife, who's sitting in the background. She and I have already said hello, just in case people are saying, Alyssa, what? Who's he talking to?
Yeah, she's as usual, neck deep in a book. Yeah,
and she's the brains behind the outfit. Just want to say that.
Well, yeah, she's definitely the scheduling behind the outfit for sure. So I think like last year we did the crazy silly science of skating, which was all the scientists, and I wanted to have fun. I wanted the world to just have a giggle, and we went for it. And then Alyssa wanted to do rock and roll last year, and so this last just a month or so ago, Stars and Ice was rock and roll. The choreography was so much fun, and so my mind goes towards skaters who are excited to get on the ice and not feeling the pressure of having it to be perfect, but more like the pressure of going, I need to show this audience how much fun I'm having. We did Alyssa did a number in this last session, this last Stars and Ice, that was Brothers in Arms, and it did have to be perfect. It literally needed that perfection. And I stepped back. I had nothing to do with it. Alyssa hasn't done her own choreography in her career, but did a fantastic job, and it's new for her, you know. But she never really saw herself as a choreographer, but lately has been feeling the pull. And so it was just fantastic to allow her more rein and more, you know, more creativity, self creativity in the last 3 or 4 years of her career, and to be on the side and cheering her on, and then to step completely out of the way and let that happen. And time again, everyone has a lot of fun in the rock and roll numbers, and then the comments are about the one poignant moment in the show. And that's so she gets more attention than I do, which I like.
I know you do, you rascal. So the thing that maybe people don't know about, and that I know through a gazillion conversations over the years, you are a super smart guy who is very thoughtful. You think about things. So when you're doing commentary, for instance, you're not doing the throwaway comments, you're not doing the this, that, and the rest. You are actually thinking about things. And it's one of the things I have admired most about the way that you frame programs and the way that you frame performances. Is it possible that your experience as a skater has helped frame you as a core, as a, excuse me, as a commentator? And I,
But of course, yeah.
okay, tell me why or how.
I mean, I think that I've been able to see our sport from so many different angles, as a world champion, as a complete loser, you know, like on the biggest stage. I've seen the everything. I've seen as a choreographer, director of Stars and Ice. I've counted the other day, I think it's nine tours globally. Which is more than people think. And then commentary as well, which is really an interesting relationship with the sport, because we intersect ourselves into their performance. It's quite intrusive. So I try really hard to be a fan, not be too hard on the skaters, not get too personal. I've made all these mistakes over and over again, but I keep learning and trying to. And I got some great advice once early in my choreography, sorry, my career as a commentator, which was to pretend you're sitting on the couch with them in their house. And they're like, wow, Kurt Browning's in our house today. Here's some tea and crumpets. Tell me about that skater. And so it's like, well, yeah, this skater is this, and what they just did is this. And so I've hung on to that like desperately my whole career, to try to just sit on the couch with them at home. Now, if you're doing commentary like Ted Barton, where your audience is a little more aware, I think that when I'm doing it for CBC, which is who I've been working with for a long time now, my audience is a little more like coming in. I want to enjoy the skating. I don't need to do the math as much. I'm more like, just let me enjoy the sport and explain it to me. I want to learn something new, and I want to feel smart about what's happening, but I don't necessarily want a whole bunch of numbers thrown at me. So that's where I come from. I try to come from an emotional standpoint, an excitement standpoint. Scott Hamilton does that very well when someone lands a jump and he's landing it with them. And so and try desperately to stay out of the way. But you know, we always make that, we get excited, we make that mistake, and we occasionally do talk too much. But man, it's when you're so invested emotionally with every single skate because you love the sport so much, or if you know the skater wow, then you're, you know, when Jason Brown skates, and I know him quite well, you're emotionally involved. And it's,
you got
awesome.
Fingers crossed. You got the fingers crossed. You hope that it's all going to go well. I know that you're pulling for all the skaters and hoping that they're going to have a good performance. When a skater does not skate well, and you have to interview them or you have to talk about it or whatever. I remember very well at the Olympic Games, I think it was Rod Black who spoke to you after your performance.
Yep, that was a tough interview.
Tough for him and tough for you. But what I loved about it is that you parted as friends. He didn't accuse you of anything. And I think that that's what you're talking about in terms of commentary, that you want to be able to be proud of what you said, even though you're telling the truth. Yeah. Is that fair to say?
I remember that interview, and I think that Rod was trying to figure out what went wrong. And he had, I felt like he'd asked the same question kind of two or three times in a row. And I was sitting there, and I think I said, I don't know how many different ways I can describe 0.7 seconds. Like,
wow.
Like, back off. So, it's a tricky relationship interviewing, something that I haven't done a whole lot of. But when a skater is having a really tough skate in one of the biggest moments of their life, you end up talking more. You kind of don't let the carnage happen. If it's the third fall or it's the fourth step out or whatever it might be, now you're filling the void. You're explaining what's happening to the audience. You're not letting them sit there by themselves in that tough moment. You're adding. And then if you've got Patrick Chan nailing it from the first moment, or Jeff Bottle or anybody, if you're commentating somebody who's having a sublime skate, you back off. You know, you definitely leave them alone. And then you might find moments where you add to the excitement to get the audience going. But you definitely, so you actually end up talking more if it's not going well.
Tell me your favorite Olympic program that you've witnessed, or one of them. I know there's a gazillion of them, but is there something or a moment at the Olympic Games where you think, gee, I'm sure glad I was here for that?
Live, because I saw Bolero on TV, and it's still crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
How different that was than everyone else. The Duchesneys did the same thing live for me when they, I think, where was it that they did so well?
Worlds, Halifax.
Halifax, but at the Olympics, they medaled too, right? And
sorry, Olympics,
And I think that Yuna Kim at the Olympics was very special. But seeing, I gotta go with the fact that I was young and it was in Calgary, and the Battle of the Bryans. I mean, the Battle of the Bryans was one of the most electric moments I've ever seen live, ever. And I know that Elvis and I had a couple of competitions that were pretty good. And, you know, I've been in moments, even as a professional skater with 18,000 people there. But B&B, with the two military-themed programs.
Were you by the stands? Did you have skater seats at those Olympic Games? Where were
you? Rod Garasino was a dancer on the team with me. And Rod and I, wait for it. We started the wave.
Claim to fame. You heard it here first.
22,000 people. Whatever it was. 82,000 people. I'm not sure how many people were there. But we started that wave. We saw. And here's a cool moment. I was taking my skates off, and red in one corner and blue in one corner. And the two Bryans are in the dressing room, and it's only me in there with them. And I'm taking my skates off. And they're bent over and they're putting theirs on. And I'm getting emotional right now. And I looked up and I went, oh, one of these two guys is gonna And I think I stopped breathing. It was pretty cool.
Wow, that is remarkable. Let's talk about for 5 seconds the evolution of the sport. We've got people like Ilya Melanin, who just
he's not human. People.
How do you see the evolution of the sport? For me, I think sometimes we're sort of a dog chasing its tail, trying to find an audience rather than just doing what we do as skaters and letting the audience come to us. So I'm wondering.
I don't know if I believe that because I think there are so many skaters that are so emotionally involved with their sport that they're just, they don't even care if there's a Shoma Uno, doesn't care if there's an audience, you know. He would probably skate that passionately. Stefan Lambiel, Shailen Bourne, like there's lots of people out there that, that would be, I think, as intense if they were alone, you know, like, so I'm not sure I knew that what you meant by that, because we do need an audience. That's why we're working so hard. So I do covet the days for our sport when it was filled. When it was really filled. I think U.S. Nationals has been stronger lately, but as a general rule, the sport is not thriving, and professional shows, it's really tough to keep them fiscally viable, and in North America, it's really tough. And so Ilya coming along and being so vibrant and so owning of his style, and I think that's been missing. Like really, people who are stepping up, not afraid to be a star. And there is some arrogant attitude that comes along with, like, Plushenko, for example, steps on the ice and he's like, nobody has ever skated on this ice before. I'm the only one.
You know what? You're right.
So there is a complete ownership of the stage. And I think that's what we're missing is like people who will step up and really, really take you. I think Kaori Sakamoto does it.
Yep.
I wish that she would do something that hinted as to what she's like off the ice more. I'm still waiting for that program. I keep telling her, do something funny, bring your personality. And then
she's got a great personality.
Oh my gosh. I keep telling her also, please have your own talk show host. You have to have your own talk show and entertain everybody in Japan. So I think that's what we need a lot of things. But I really love skaters who are not afraid to say, this is Alva Stoico, this is my ice, and you are my audience, and this is going to be awesome.
This is mine. You guys struggle it out between second and third. That's fine. But just know that step's mine.
Yeah, ice dance. Everyone pretends that they're the winners, you know, like, but everybody who steps on the ice in ice dance is like, mine. This is mine. And in singles, we still get that fear of the jumps and is it going to go right? So the skater who owns it from the beginning, and I mentioned Patrick and Ilya and Jason, because I'm always thinking about the guys, and they seem to step on the ice and own it before the music starts. And Yurik's like, you're in for something good.
You're ready for something good. The skater
has to believe it before the audience will buy into it.
Well, that's the thing. You know, what's that old expression? Fake it till you make it. You really have to say, I'm the one. And then you become the one.
And you do start by faking it. Like you do. You're like, it's not real. And the moves are alien. And, you know, I was watching Jason Brown and his choreographer. Chased his name out of my head.
Okay, keep going for a second. I'll come
Jason
to
Brown's
me.
Choreographer. Rohin Ward. Just chased his name out of
my head.
Thanks,
Alyssa.
Thanks, Alyssa, for the 14th time. And she's been a big part of this chat.
Yes, she has.
But Rohin and Jason working together, and you can see it's not always just ba-bing, magic. There's like moments where they're just laughing, that didn't work, and somebody falls, and then the choreographer falls. And it is faking it till you make it. But then when you get to that moment where you feel like you've got a polished stone to present, it's a really cool moment.
It is very cool. Okay, Kurt, last question. Three top pieces of advice for our younger skaters out there who are watching this podcast.
Okay, kids, guards off. I can't count that.
Classic.
One of the things I think that people like Stefan and Jeff Buttle and Jason Brown and Rohin do is that they dance off ice. And it's something I didn't really do. Like I toyed around with it a little bit. So as far as advice for a young skater, it's been my go-to lately. Take dance. Take all kinds of dance lessons off ice. Work off ice as well. Physical fitness, kill it. Like be so strong that you don't get hurt on the ice. And that's something. And then we can hearken back to what we were talking about before, where it's okay to believe in yourself. It's all right. It's okay to like enjoy your skating and to think you've earned this moment to share it. I think so many times, especially, you know, teenage guys, they get on the ice and they just keep it to themselves. And if I just do that, then no one will notice me. But it should feel the opposite. It should feel like I've worked so hard to create this thing. And now I'm just gonna show it to you. I'm just gonna polish it up and I'm gonna present it to you. And to think and stand there and go, as much as anybody else in this competition, I deserve my 3 minutes. I deserve my 3 minutes. And you've earned it, and then go for it. And allow the moment to happen as it will. It will unfold in some way. And you might be disappointed and you might be reveling afterwards, but allow the moment to have a chance to live. Don't hide behind the imaginary pillar that doesn't exist at Sunrise.
Kurt Browning, I have so enjoyed this moment and I am indeed reveling in it. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. Kurt, you're a darling. Thank you, Alyssa. That's it for us. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast. Don't forget to follow us on social media. I'm at Skating PJ. Until next time. Bye for now.